Today is the 13th of Tishrei, and it's the 12th of October, first class after Yom Kippur, and we are beginning the third Mishnah of the 8th chapter of Masechet Brachot. My hope had been to go on to this Mishnah without reviewing the last Mishnah, because the last one was tremendously complicated with all different matters of Tuma and Tahara. And not just Tuma and Tahara on the level of Doraita, but actually rabbinic enactments about Tuma and Tahara. But it turns out we can't just skip reviewing that and go to the next Mishnah, because the next Mishnah builds upon the previous Mishnah in matters of Tuma and Tahara. And actually the truth is it's kind of a lesson. Don't try and skip anything, right? Even if Tuma and Tahara is complicated and seemingly irrelevant, it's part of the Torah. So we have to go over it and understand it at least a little bit. So in order to help us understand...
Just to remind us, Tuma and Tahara. Tuma is impure and Tahara is pure.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sure I had it straight in my mind.
Thank you. So because it's so complicated, I had made up my own summary of everything going on here on the sheets from last week and the week before. All we'll do is we'll read it together. So this is, again, it says in the top, Masechet Brachot Perek Het Mishnah Bet. First page says that, and then there are two other pages that have on them my summary of everything you have to know to understand Mishnah Bet. And there's a lot there, a lot of complicated, intricate, arcane details.
We couldn't have started with the summary?
Say again?
We couldn't have started with the summary?
Well, that's... No, that was the idea.
Yeah.
But I was ill. We would have read this...
No. I mean, you know, months ago, you know, or whatever.
Well, this is the first occasion on this topic.
Right.
Oh, this is...
The first occasion on this topic of Tuma and Tahara. Okay, so...
This year.
This year and last year, and the year before. We have not done matters of Tuma and Tahara and Masechet Brachot until now.
Oh, I see. When you were saying you were hoping to start this one without reviewing the last one, I thought, as a class, you had already...
This covered. Was done last week.
Yeah, we did do it last week.
As a review, I understand, but so we want to review it.
Okay, I understand. Okay, so you don't have.
I don't have.
Sure. So you're going to look on with me.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have
this? No, or don't you have two copies now?
Yeah. So I'll look on there. Thanks. No, I don't have two, but we can share.
Okay. So the top of the page, this the second page, right? It says Masechet Brachot Perek Het Mishnah Bet, overview of the laws of purity. Impurity is per the written Torah. We're going to divide between Tuma and Tahara Doraita, and then Tuma Tahara de Rabbanan. So the first rule is number one, right? Avi Avot Tuma, literally the father or the fathers of Tuma. This is the source of Tuma, the strongest source of Tuma. You got it?
Yeah.
Is Gufat Adam, the corpse of a man. Generates the strongest type of Tuma, as we'll see. Number two, Av HaTuma. Av HaTuma is a second level. It's not Avi Avot, it's not the father of the father, it's just the father. It's the another category of Tuma. And how do you get this second category of Tuma? So it says, Adam Ukelim, only a man or vessels can become Tamei from this type of Tuma. Adam Ukelim, Shekibel mehanal, that received from the mentioned above. In other words, if a Adam or Kelim touched or was under the pressure of or under the roof of a dead body, I'll say it again, if you touch a dead body or a dead body is on top of you but doesn't touch you, let's say there's five layers in between, but if you have the pressure of a dead body on you or you touch it, or if you're under the same roof of a dead body, there's three ways of passing on Tuma. Contact, pressure, or what's called OL, tent. That's not important to remember the ways of passing on Tuma, because we won't be talking about that. We'll always be assuming that things are touching for what happens in our Mishnah. Only one of those three ways of passing on Tuma and Tahara. Anyway, what happens? So the Adam Kelim received from the above, from the dead body, that's one way of becoming an Av Tuma. A second way of becoming an Av Tuma is O, Sheretz. A Sheretz is a creepy crawler. Right. One of the eight types of creepy crawlers mentioned in the Torah. Poor David. He's got so many responsibilities. One of the eight creepy crawlers mentioned in the Torah. Or if it's dead, right, it says after the parentheses, mate. A sheretz that's mate, not a sheretz that's alive, a sheretz that's dead. Right? A dead sheretz. Or a mitzura, right, a leper. Right, so one of the eight creepy crawlers if it's dead. Or a mitzura, a leper. Or a zav, that's a male or a female with some type of sexual disease. Or a nida. There might be others that I haven't mentioned. Those are the sources.
An impure woman from menstruation.
Yeah, yeah. So there, in other words, in principle, there are two ways of becoming an avet tuma: either touching a via vota tuma, or being an av in yourself. If you're a zav, if you're a nida, if you're a mitzura, or a sheretz that's dead, is in itself an avet tuma. So again, there are two ways of getting tuma on the level of av, either being it or getting from a via vota tuma. And what is even being it? If you're a dead sheretz, a dead creepy crawler, then you're an avet tuma. Or if you're a mitzura, a leper, or if you're a zav, or if you're a nida, you are a vota tuma. You're an avet tuma. Questions?
Yes. So you can receive it from the dead body, or through one of the three methods, you can receive it from a dead body, or it's the second level of impurity if you, a dead insect.
So the dead insect is that level.
Is that level.
And so is a leper.
A leper, a nida.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not saying... Yet, we haven't addressed the question of what happens if you touch a nida.
We have not addressed that, right.
Okay.
We have not addressed that.
And what's the last word after nida?
Bechule, etc. I don't remember if there are other categories. There probably are some that I don't have in my mind. Okay. Category number three is a rishon latuma. That's tuma once removed. A rishon, right? Tuma once removed. How do we get the category of tuma once removed? Either Adam or Kelim, Shekiblu Meha'av, right? A person or a vessel that received from an Av. How do you receive from an Av? Either you touched a dead creepy crawler, or you touched a leper, or you touched a Zav, you touched Nida, or you're under the same roof with them, or you were under their pressure. Or it could be that you touch someone who had touched a dead body, right? That's also it could be. It says you get it from having contact with an av. An av could be either an independent av, like the nida, or an av is someone who got it from a via vota tuma, from a dead body. So it could be already the third in a line that's a chain. Dead body to a person who touches it, to a person who touches that person, and now you have an av, you have a rishon l'tuma.
It's called in Hebrew, Rishon.
Rishon. So written there.
Number
three is a Rishon Latuma. And everything I'm saying is written. I'm just explaining.
I just have to take notes to make it sink in.
That's fine.
That's okay. No, that way you can write on it.
Okay. All right, yeah. Then you can look here.
Yeah.
You can look here. So... By the way, notice that in Category 2 and Category 3, I'm looking at my numbers on the sheet, these are just Adam and Kelim, which means that if something else touched, for example, a dead body, it wouldn't become Tameh. If food touched a dead body, it wouldn't become Tameh at all. It's only Adam or Kelim. And the same thing for the third category, that's called the Rishon Latuma. It's only Adam or Kelim. It's only man or vessels. But if a piece of food touched an av l'tuma, nothing would happen.
Not capable of receiving it. It's not capable of receiving impurity.
Right. Yeah. I hope I'm right about that. It's been a long time since I've learned this. Well, anyway, I hope I'm right about that, and if I'm not, it's not going to be directly relevant to what we're learning.
Is there a limit to the number of people that it can be passed
on? Wait a second. You'll see.
Okay.
So now we get to a number four. which is a Shini Latuma, right? Shini comes after Rishon. This is Tuma twice removed. Ochlim Umashkim Shekiblu Meharishon. Food or drink that got it from the Rishon. So here, in number four, Adam Okelim can't get it from the Rishon. Only Ochlim Umashkim. Right, so that means that if... Let's go through the whole progression. We have a dead body. A human being touches the dead body, becomes an Av. Then a human being touches the Av and becomes a Rishon. Okay? Then a human being touches the Rishon. Nothing happens. It's only if Ochlim Umashkim touched the Rishon that Tumah is passed on.
What if Ochlim or Mashkim touched the dead body?
Right, right.
That goes without saying.
Right. Eric caught me. That's exactly where I realized that I have a hole in my knowledge. I'm trying to think, but I don't know.
Okay. What you just said, there's a progression. You have the dead body, and a person touches it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an Av.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then a person touches the Av. That's a
Rishon.
Rishon.
Mm-hmm. Number three on the list. And then, if a person touches the Rishon, nothing happens. Nothing happens. It's only if food or drink touches the Rishon that it becomes a Sheni.
Can you say that last sentence?
Yes. If a person touches a Rishon, the Tuma, nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Only if food or drink touches the Rishon does it become a Sheni Latuma. So now, if we have something that's a Sheni Latuma, which is again only food or drink, if a person touches that, nothing happens. If food or drink touches that, nothing happens. The only thing that can get Tuma from a Sheni is...
Truma.
Truma. Right. Only if you have Truma, the special type of food, or you have Kodesh, something already dedicated to the Beit Mikdash, only those things have the higher sensitivity that can allow them to be, let's say, infected from a Sheni and become a Shlishi. But nothing else can be infected by a Sheni. So in other words, if you have no Kodesh in your house and no Truma in your house, then even if your whole house is on a level of Sheni Latuma, big deal. It doesn't spread. It's not that contagious.
And just say that Tuma is the dedicated food.
Truma.
Truma.
Truma. Right, don't confuse between Truma and Tuma.
Yeah.
Truma is like Trumot Masrot.
Truma is the food dedicated to a Kohen.
Yes. Yeah.
And does the Shnei the Tuma, if it came in contact with teruma, does it lower the teruma to the category of Shnei Latuma or just to ordinary food?
No, it becomes a Shlishi Latuma.
It does.
That's number five.
Oh, because that's what that
that's
is.
That's number five.
That's
what is a Shlishi Latuma? It's Kodesh Utruma Shekiblu Me'asheni.
And it's and that at that point would be forbidden to eat or forbidden to eat as just as teruma.
Very good. It can't be eaten by a Kohen.
Uh-huh.
It can be eaten by a Zal, by an ordinary person.
So it loses its status as Truma, essentially.
Shlishit L'Truma is not as bad as, real in a way, as
well, the lower levels are not as bad as the higher levels because they can't pass on the Tumas readily. Uh-huh. At the higher level...
Tuma.
Say it again?
But it's still Tuma.
In and of itself.
Yeah.
But it can't pass it on except to certain
these definitions
things.
Have to do, I think I'm understanding, these definitions don't have to do with how bad something is, but rather what it's capable of doing to something else.
Yeah. That's true. Right. That's true. Its level of contagionous?
Yeah. Contagion.
I remember studying some of this, and then a corollary, thank you.
You speak English as good as I do.
Yeah, my accent. Was the direction of water the way where water flows downhill or uphill? Can it be counted in the level of water required for a mikvah.
Mm-hmm.
And how they connect, and then that was, I'm not an expert, but I remember the discussion.
Yeah. By the way, we're going to see water flowing uphill in another few minutes.
Okay.
So the sixth level here is Revila Tuma, and that's Kodesh Shekibel Miashlishi. In other words, the only way that a Shlishi Latuma can pass it on is by having contact with Kodesh, not even Shuma, just Kodesh. So again, the principle is that as we go further and further down the line and the tumah becomes weaker as far as its ability to infect, it's only more and more sensitive things that can get that tumah.
And Kodesh means?
Kodesh is a korban, something is dedicated to the Beit Mikdash.
Dedicated to the, okay.
Yeah, it's even on a higher level than Shuma.
That's only sacrifice, or it can also be... say Bikurim, or it's anything to be brought into that.
I don't know. I just don't know these laws. Certainly something designated as Bikurim is not Kodesh, but once it's been accepted by the Kohen, then it's Kodesh, as far as I know.
How about donations to the Beit HaMikdash? Monetary donations?
I'm only going to guess. I think that Kodesh only refers to Ochlim U'Mashkim, but I'm guessing.
The things that are actually going to be
consumed. There's a whole world here of halachot that I know, you know, like a half a percent of.
You don't do this every day?
Oh, thank you for noticing that. Okay, so all of that is Tumah Doraita. Tumah Doraita, in other words, that's the way Chachamim understand the framework of Tumah and Tarah as mandated by the Torah. And in this type of Tumah, as Eric remembers from last week, only full objects or human beings become infected. In other words, if I'm Tameh, it means I'm completely Tameh. If I'm Tahor, it means I'm completely Tahor. There's no such thing as being half Tameh and half Tahor. And furthermore, if you are Tameh, your whole body has to become Tahor through a process of immersion in the mikveh. Your whole body, not just half your body. There are certain types of Tumah, which at the higher levels here, that even immersion doesn't help. You have to have the ashes of the red heifer sprinkled on you, for example. Certain types of Tumah, you have to wait a full 7 days. We won't talk about all that. But the idea we want to talk about simply is that it's only a full body or a full object becomes Tumah, or Tor. It's only a full process of immersion in the mikveh, and also perhaps other things, depending on the level, that helps you to become Tahor. But then, there's a whole other world that's called Tumah Darabanan, which the rabbis invented another level of Tumah, another type of Tumah, that builds upon what we just saw, but also makes significant differences in it. And in Tumah Darabanan, there's such a thing as a person being half Tahor and half Tameh.
Hmm.
Specifically, what part of his body?
His hands.
His hands. Right. The rabbis talk about Tumat Yadayim. And the minute you see the phrase Tumat Yadayim, you have to know it's only Tumat Darabanan, because Doraita, there's no such thing. Doraita, you're all Tameh, you're all Tahor, there's no such thing as Tumat Yadayim. It can't be. Doraita, whether your hand or your nose or your feet touch something that's Tameh, if it's at a level that can pass it on to you, then it's passed on to you, your whole body. It doesn't matter. And the only way to get rid of Tumat Doraita, again, is mikveh. Perhaps other things also. But Tumah Darabanan, if it's the Tumah Darabanan that's only on the hands, and we'll talk about that, then there's a way to get rid of it only with your hands, which is?
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Wash your hands with a cup. And now a ritual washing of hands comes from the idea of Tumah Yadayim, which is only Darabanan. So don't confuse it all with Tumah Daraita. It's based upon, as we'll see, but it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. So now we're going to read all the rules. I take it back. We're never going to read all the rules. We're going to read a tiny, tiny, tiny portion of the rules of Tumah.
I like the quality of the person with the vessel. I mean, we could almost say it's a vessel. You know, not just person or vessels, but a vessel, because in the Kabbalistic sense people are vessels.
Okay, I would just say that you have to be very careful from mixing in Hasidic Rashot into halakha.
Okay.
Leave that to Sunday night. Sunday morning.
But I like the idea anyway. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay, so now we get to the rabbinic decrees that stand at the foundation of the Mishnah, which was the second Mishnah of the eighth Perek. So here are all the different assumptions and rules that go into understanding that Mishnah that we learned last time, needed for today also. It goes like this. The rabbis decreed that a Kohen must wash his hands before eating Truma and Kodesh. Okay, that's the rabbinic decree. Now again, the right, it makes no sense. Because either the Kohen that comes to eat Truma, if he's Tamei or Tahor, his whole body. If he's Tamei, the Torah says he can't eat it. If he's Tahor, he can eat it without washing his hands. But the rabbi said that even the Kohen that can eat Truma Doraita, he's Tahor, we want him to do something in addition. We want him to wash his hands before he eats Truma. The formal mechanism for this decree is the proclamation that Stam Yadayim Shniot Letuma. The rabbis decreed that Stam Yadayim means normal hands, hands I don't know about their origin, and the word Stam in Hebrew, it means like it is. Stam Yadayim Shniot Letuma. Stam Yadayim, according to the rabbis, have the status of Shniot Letuma. So look at the list above in Tuma Doraita, and notice there where it said Shini Letuma, that was number 4 on the list. That Shini Letuma. So even though we say that Doraita, there are certain rules how something becomes a Shini Letuma. Right? It's only Ochlim Mashkim. Again, it's number 4 on the list above. I'm just going to stop and let you think for a minute. So you see Shini Letuma on the list above in Doraita. Shini Letuma can only be Ochlim Mashkim, food and drink that got it from a Rishon. But the rabbi said all hands are by definition the category of Shini Letuma. So again, this contradicts Doraita. Because Doraita, human beings can't become a Shini, and certainly hands as opposed to the body can't. But the rabbi is saying all hands in the world have the status of Shini Letuma unless you know where those hands came from. In other words, unless you know they've been washed a few minutes ago. All hands are Shini Letuma. Now, if you look in the list above, the Doraita list, something that is a Shini Letuma, what does it do? It passes on to a Shlishi. What is a Shlishi? Kodesh or Truma. So by the rabbis declaring your hands to be a Shini, they're preventing you from eating Truma. Because you'd be making the Truma impure and then you can't eat it. It's a Kohen, we said. So the rabbi said that a Kohen can't eat Truma without washing his hands, and they did that by declaring his hands as a Shini Letuma.
The reason they chose hands as opposed to feet or other parts of the body, I guess, would be that it comes into contact with food. Right?
I guess.
Mean, that makes sense.
I guess.
That makes sense.
I'll just say something I said last week, that after reading all of the rabbinic takanot, the rabbinic decrees, and all of the mechanisms, we still might not know the why of the whole thing. These all just might be technical mechanisms for achieving a goal that we don't know about, that's not written down. Like, the meta idea might not be recorded any place. We might have to figure out it might be, it might not be. Can't be certain. So anyway, that means that unwashed hands, even if a person is not known to be Tamei, will be considered as if belonging to someone who is Shini Letuma, will behave towards this person's hands as if this person is a Shini Letuma, which means that any Shlishi that he eats, take it back, any Kodesh or Truma that he eats will become a Shlishi, which means he can't eat it because it's now Tamei. Okay. I wrote in parentheses, even though the right that human being cannot become a Shini Letuma, right? Only Ochlim Mashkim. Such hands would, upon contact with Truma or Kodesh, make these into a Shlishi Letuma, just like we just said. According to the rabbinic decree, washing the hands removes the Tuma. Even though Doraita, there is no such thing as washing hands to remove Tuma. Well, you have to go to a mikveh. In this same framework, the rabbis further decreed that hands, even if already washed, that touch a Rishon Letuma, even if you just wash your hands. Okay, so you got rid of the Tuma of a Sheni. But still, These hands, said the rabbis, even if they're washed, if they touch a Rishon Letumah, so glance up at the chart again, of Rishon, as shown is Adam LeKelim, a Kelim, or Ochlim Mashkim, right?
And that doesn't do anything to a person, really.
And that should never do anything to a person, exactly. It can only do something to Ochlim Mashkim. But the rabbi said that these hands become a Sheni Letumah. And one may therefore not eat Shuman Kodesh, rather hands must be washed again. And again, this is only a Kohen. This first level of decree applies only to a Kohen. Okay. Next.
I learned when I was in that discussion that I had on when you go into the mikvah to prepare to eat one of these categories, you have to have the intention of which category you're going to eat. If you have the intention of the highest level, then you can eat any level below that. If you only have the intention of eating, you know,
a lower level,
you can't then decide.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of the idea of the water not flying uphill, too. In that sense.
But here we're going to see water flying uphill.
Okay.
The rabbis expanded upon the above and declared that upon eating bread, one must wash his hands. You see what we mean by that?
Meaning for all people.
I think so. Right. That all people have to wash their hands before eating bread. The formal mechanism for this is the concept of srach tumah. We said last week that srach means following after tumah. Or imitating tumah. The formal mechanism for this is the concept of srach tumah. That means in order to make sure that the Kohen will always wash for tumah, we demand of him to wash for everything. We go so far as to demand this behavior of non-Kohenim as well. The whole world is washing for bread, and even the Kohen is washing for bread when it's not tumah. All of this to remind the Kohen to wash his hands for tumah. And again, the whole washing his hands for tumah was only a takanat derabanan, based on the fact that stam yadayim shniot the tumah.
And srach?
Srach means following after or imitating. Oh. It's all for the purpose of the world of tumah. I'm sorry, the world of tumah. Now, it might have been logically consistent indeed to demand washing of the hands for all produce, because tumah may be of any type of produce. But in any case, the rabbis limited their decree to bread. So make it clear that the Kohen has to wash his hands for tumah, all types of tumah, not just bread. But when the Kohen eats non-tumah, and when we eat non-tumah, the rabbis limited their takanah to bread. But again, for the Kohen, who's eating tumah, the takanah applies even to vegetables, applies to anything that's tumah. This expansion covers as well even washed hands that now touch the Rishon Letumah. Remember in the Ayavab we said that if washed hands touch the Rishon Letumah, they become a Sheni Letumah. So the same thing in this Takana, if I wash my hands for bread and then I touch the Rishon Letumah, even though Duraita, Rishon Letumah, doesn't make hands or any human being into a Sheni, only Ochlim Mashkim become a Sheni, But if I wash my hands and I touch the chair, and the chair is a Rishon, right? The chair can be a Rishon. A kli could be a Rishon. How did it become a Rishon? Because let's say it's touched the Nida. Right? If a Nida sat in the chair is a Rishon. And now, when I sit in the chair, I don't become anything. I don't become anything, because Rishon can make a Sheni only food or drink. So it's fine to sit on the chair. But the rabbi said, if I wash my hands and I then sat in the chair, and if my hands touch the chair, then my hands, say the Rabbanan, become a Sheni. The Rabbanan, go back and wash your hands. And then don't touch the chair when you sit down. What if the table is a Rishon? I can't put my hands on the table.
like a surgeon.
I also can't put the food on the table, but I can put the food on a plate.
So you'd be like a surgeon.
Life becomes very complicated.
Yeah. And if, like, for instance, say this pen touches the table and I touch the pen, that's...
Well, if it, no.
Because if the pen...
The pen is only a... The pen is nothing, by the way.
I see.
The pen is not even a kli.
It's an object.
Uh-huh.
It's an object.
Contain something?
Right, and a kli is something that contains, that has a beit kibul. Right. The table has a beit kibul. It doesn't have to be convex, concave.
The cup.
Concave.
The cup on the table.
But the pen, you can't put, you don't, the pen is not designed to put things on it.
Right.
Or in it.
Right.
Well, wait a second, in it. Oh, wait a second, there
it
is something in it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, there is something in it. Right. Take it back.
Ink.
Okay. But in a pencil has lead in it.
So it depends, because if it's open from both ends, then it's not a cleave. If it's open only from one end, so it can contain something.
Okay.
So again, I'm not even...
Well, yes.
I'm not even ignoramus in these laws. I'm less than that.
Well, that's okay. You're more than we are.
Okay. C. The rabbis further declared that any sheni latuma, any sheni latuma, will make mashkim liquids into rishon latuma. That's water flowing uphill. They're saying that. How could a sheni create a rishon? The right, a sheni only creates a shlishi. But the rabbi said that a sheni latuma, specifically concerning liquids, can make them into a rishon.
Which, even though deraisa, only a person could be a rishon, according to my chart.
Right.
But here we're making liquid to a rishon.
And of course a sheni could never create a rishon, only a shlishi.
Yeah.
But here it's going backwards. So why is it important? Because once the liquid becomes a rishon, it now has the powers of rishon to make food and drink into a sheni. I'll read the C again. The rabbis further declared that any sheni latuma will make mashkim into a rishon latuma. This includes, among other cases, stam yadayim, right? So I have my hands, which we said, my hands are fine, you know, I'm not tamei. But the rabbi said all hands are, if they're not washed, they're a sheni latuma. So if all my hands touch a drop of liquid on the outside of this kli, and I'm using an example on purpose, because it goes back to our Mishnah from last time, if there's a little bit of tea on the outside of the cup, and I pick up the cup to drink it, my hands touch it, so my hand, so the, I'm sorry, the liquid be, my hands unwashed are a sheni. I touch the liquid becomes a rishon. If the liquid is a rishon, so now it could make the cup itself into a sheni.
On the outside of the cup.
On the outside, because we're going to see there's a takana that the outside of a kli could become a sheni. We didn't get to that yet.
Here's a question.
We're about to get to that.
Okay, so you have a cube.
A cube.
It's solid.
A cube that's solid.
So you can't have, so it doesn't contain anything.
It's not a kli.
Right. But say it gets wet or sweats or something,
mm-hmm.
and it forms liquid on the side.
Yeah.
Is that totally, it doesn't have...
So that's a liquid.
Right.
But what that liquid could do once it becomes a rishon, liquid won't do anything to the cube because the cube is not a kli.
Okay. Alright.
I'm going to wait for David because I think he deserves to not suffer for being president of the synagogue.
But thank you. But if, so let's say the chair's tahara and the chair is tahor and the this kli is tahor. Okay, everything's tahor except your hands.
Except my hands.
And you come and you touch a little liquid. Now all of a sudden that's rishon, and the rishon spills, then on these kleis that it touches are then.
So since it's a rishon, even if it's only rishon de rabbanan, but it's a rishon.
Yes.
And it could make, as you see from the chart, ochlimu mashkim
into a sheni.
Yeah. Okay. So the liquid takes on that.
But here that's not so important.
Nice.
What the liquid will do to other liquid, but what the liquid will do to a solid is important because the liquid already became a rishon. So now the liquid...
That's what I'm saying. It spills on the table then.
Well, no. I mean, the table is a kli.
Okay.
But if it touches, ochel, the ochel will become a sheni.
Food.
But in addition, there's a takana that certain types of kelim can become now a sheni, which we're about to read that.
Okay.
But first, let's finish C.
Mm-hmm.
So we say the number C. The rabbis further declared that any sheni l'tuma will come will make mashkim into a rishon l'tuma. This includes, among other things, stam yadayim. Stam yadayim can make liquid into a rishon. Now, since the standard laws of rishon l'tuma is that it makes tamei all ochlim and mashkim, one will have to be washed for all damp or moistened foods that he eats directly with his hands, and not just for bread. Right? Because again, if stam yadayim are a sheni l'tuma, and they can make liquids into rishon, then if I have stam yadayim and I have my hands get wet on the table, and then I eat food, so that food now becomes a sheni l'tuma. And the rabbis already told us, it's part of this takana, you can't eat any sheni l'tuma, right, that becomes tamei. Even if you're not a kohen, that's part of the takana. That's why, by the way, on Leila Seder, right, we wash.
Seder night.
Right, we wash for the karpas, because we're imitating the laws of the mikdash, in which we're assuming that our hands, if they're unwashed, are sheni l'tuma. If they touch the moisture that when we dip the karpas, the moisture becomes a rishon, then the food will become a sheni, and it's just like eating bread without washing your hands. It's a sheni. And the truth is that the halacha l'maaseh, there are some who hold that all the time. I know that the former chief rabbi of Israel, Mordechai Eliyahu, tells us, the students, that when do you wash your hands? We eat bread, and when you eat vegetables that have been washed, or fruit with your bare hands. So it's the same basic takana.
Okay, and then my question is, the form of the washing the hands, is that just washing with water and then doing the prayer, or is it on the level of washing into the prayer but with soap?
No soap.
The water in the prayer.
And then the prayer also doesn't matter.
Okay.
We say a bracha, but right. The bracha doesn't help us get rid of the tumah in any sense.
It would have been more logical to only apply the washing to vegetable, to produce, since it's originally to remind the kohanim that when they eat truma, they have to wash.
Yeah, but bread also.
Right, I know, but that's...
Bread is also produce.
Oh, okay. Okay, it comes from, that's true.
Yeah, they get grain, and they make from it bread, and that bread is truma.
Right, okay.
Is this topic about the not saying a bracha for the Seder with the washing for kalpas? Is that unconnected?
Why don't we say a bracha?
Yeah.
I guess, I'm not sure. I guess because there's a machloket, and I'm not sure what the machloket is, if we have to do that or not. But according to the takan as we see it here, we have to do it.
Okay, so ordinarily we would. There's something else, some other issue, I guess, in that washing.
I'm just not sure. Just not sure.
Well, there's no... The washing for vegetable for non-Kohens is not decreed by anybody. It's not rabbinic. Washing for
it
produce
is. No, it
for
is.
Non-Kohens.
We just read it right here.
Sorry, I missed it.
Right, that's C. The rabbis further decreed that any sheni l'tuma will make mashkim into a rishon l'tuma. This includes, among other things, stam yadayim. Stam yadayim will make liquids into a rishon. Now, since standard law of rishon l'tuma that makes tamei or lochlim and mashkim, one will have to wash for all damp or moistened foods that he eats directly with his hands, and not just for bread. Right? It's the same thing we've been talking about.
And you're saying that damp would cover produce, is that?
And if you've just washed your vegetables, your fruit,
they're usually damp.
It would make the food a sheni.
Yeah, the food becomes a sheni.
But as a non-Kohen, can't I eat that?
Yeah, but part of the whole takana here is that we're behaving like Kohenim have to behave. And that was only for bread, but it's also for this one particular thing of that liquids become a rishon to make the food into a sheni.
Okay.
I'll just say one last time, I really don't know anything about this.
Okay.
And I don't know what we're level. I mean, is there a third and fourth level beyond ignoramus? Because that's what I am.
Well, the truth is, if you get this, you're on the same level as me.
No. Maybe. Thank you.
I remember already 25 years ago being extremely confused in yeshiva when we started learning this. Uh-huh. And also when we even finished learning it. Uh-huh. Okay, so D. The rabbis further adduced to the above matter of liquids by decreeing that although a Rishon LeTumah usually passes Tumah onto Ochlim U'Mashkim, it will be passed on to Kelim as well, which will become a Sheni LeTumah. The world of this extension is limited to the outside of the Kli, but does not affect the inside of the Kli.
Hmm.
That's certainly very strange that one part of a Kli can become Tumah and not the other part of a Kli. It's as strange as the fact that hands can come to me without affecting the whole body. It's all part of this rabbinic framework. So what does that mean? So let's say that I have my stam yadayim and I didn't wash them, and then I picked up this glass and a little bit of water was on the outside, a drop fell out, so the drop became a rishon. And then the kli, its outside, can become now a sheni. So the kli is a sheni on its outside. Well, so what? Well, again, that would matter if I'm eating truma, because we have on a list a number of five that a shlishi l'tuma is kodesh a truma shekibel mi a sheni. So I have the outside of a kli that is tamei. I better be careful not to have any truma there. But again, we have to behave as if we're kohenim and as if everything is truma. So it's going to be dangerous to have, again, hands that are unwashed, that touch the liquid on the outside of the kli becomes a sheni on its outside. We have to be careful. So that actually...
Wash.
Say it again?
Your washing cup becomes... It doesn't quite work, does it?
So your washing cup.
Yeah, people tear off paper and...
It would become a sheni with tumma.
They hold the cup with paper, and then they...
Wash.
So they don't touch the cup, and then they...
Maybe that's why there's handles.
And then you become OCD.
What?
So it would become a
maybe that's why you do. Maybe
completely
that's
dry the cup.
Maybe that's one of the reasons you pass, because then you're holding
that's
it.
The problem.
But it's
because
just,
it
no,
can
well, I understand.
Sheni, is that the idea that the cup will become a sheni?
Then they hold it with paper.
Wait a second. So what's the problem? Once I wash my hands.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, before I go into wash.
Yeah.
So I have
stam yadayim.
Stam yadayim. So I pick up the cup. The outside of the cup is now
wet.
It's wet.
Right.
So and it's
clearly
rishon.
The water is rishon. The outside of the kli therefore becomes a sheni.
The outside of the kli is a sheni.
Mm-hmm.
Wash this hand. Mm-hmm. My right hand is okay. But now I
grab it. Oh! Whammy.
But then you grabbed it with your left hand and your left hand becomes a sheni.
No, I mean now my right hand's...
You're right.
In
so
trouble
you just
again.
Keep doing this.
You're stuck in this perpetual motion machine. No. I think maybe... Okay, we don't know.
I don't want to say in the tape that I don't know because I've said it all day.
I meant to say, I don't know.
Things just don't... They stop where they're
at. Yeah, it could be that there's a limit. I don't know. I really don't know.
There is part of the system that when you wash... You fill it up holding your in your right hand.
Right.
And then you before you start the washing, you pass it to your left. And then you first pour on your right. So maybe there's something, some understanding that, you know, when while you're holding it in the right hand, you wash the left handle.
There really is a halakha, and now I just realized there really is a halakha that your hands have to be completely dry when you wash them.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. And I guess now that's the reason.
Okay.
That really, the hands have to be dry, and the handle of the kli, I guess, has to be dry, really.
Huh.
And that explains everything.
So we trace
yes,
it back.
That's
that.
Right. That would be the fix.
Look at that.
If you did that. If you were careful.
So now everyone can finally understand the foundation of the halakha. Your hands have to be dry when you wet them. Who knows? Perhaps that's even an explanation for why the sign over there says...
Turn it over.
Turn it over. Kidding.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So now... All this was in order to understand the second Mishnah of the Perek. But we're not going to take some time now to go over the second Mishnah of the Perek. I think it's late enough.
Mm-hmm.
But this information, part of it, is important for understanding the third Mishnah, which is the one we're doing today. So we have to decide about Chavruta time today, or do we just want to go on together? Let's see what time it is. It's 10:07. Perhaps we'll just learn it all together. Maybe we just learn all together today. So, with that background, I put on the table the sources for today. So now let's make sure everyone has the Mishnah. The Mishnah I didn't give out today. I assume you had it from last week and the week before. But does anyone need the sheet of the Mishnah itself? It says over here, Perek Shminit.
I don't have it on me.
So you have to bring it, right? Otherwise we cut down too many trees.
Oh, yeah, I guess I don't have it either.
Always have to bring it.
We'll share.
Okay. Does anyone else need the Mishnah?
Oh,
I'm looking
on. I can look at it.
Okay, so here we go. The Mishnah says, this is Mishnah Gimel, which means it's the top of the left-hand column. And remember, this perek of Mishnah is different than all the other prakim we've learned, because its only thematic connection is Machlokot Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, a list of Machlokot.
Where's it start on here?
So the Mishnah says as follows: Beit Shammai Umrim Mekaneach Yadav B'Mapa U'Manicha Al Hashulchan. Uveit Hillel Umrim Al Hakeset. So we'll go over that again. Beit Shammai Umrim Mekaneach Yadav B'Mapa. Dry or clean or wipe. Let's say wipe. Wipe his hands in a mapa, a napkin, a handkerchief, a towel. So Beit Shammai says, wipe your hands with a towel. Umaniha al hashulchan. That word maniha is composed of two elements, maniach otah. And I'm aspirating the hay at the end because it is a direct object. Maniach otah becomes maniha. So the direct object is feminine. What is the direct object? What is it referring back to in the previous phrase?
Yad.
No.
Oh, no, okay.
Although you're right, because the yad also
is feminine. Right.
But what is it that I'm supposed to maniach al hashulchan?
The mapa?
The mapa. So Beit Shammai says, wipe your hands on a towel and maniha, put it, meaning the towel, al hashulchan.
On the table.
On the table. Of course, we'll always have to ask ourselves, a question we've asked ourselves many times in the past, this type of language, which is the benoni poel, the present participle, is it an allowance or is it a directive? Remember, we've had that question many times. When Beit Shammai tells me to put the damp towel on the table, is he telling me you're allowed to or that you have to?
Reshut rechovah.
Reshut rechovah.
So which is it?
Oh, I'm not telling you.
Oh.
We'll have to figure it out.
Right.
We'll have to figure it out.
Right.
But in principle, the language is not clear. It's going to be a matter of context. Okay. Uveit Hillel umrim, Beit Hillel says, al hakeset, on the cushion. Or it's either I'm lying on a bed, or I'm on a chair, and there are cushions. So when Beit Hillel says al hakeset on the cushion, that's obviously not a full sentence. We have to figure out what he means. What does he mean?
Don't put the towel on the table. Put it on the cushion.
Put the towel on the cushion.
Because that's where they that's the way they used to eat is on.
Right. Right. So it turns out, as far as the structure of the Mishnah, that it's really not structured in exact fashion. Although this is the common way to do it. When it says that Beit Shammai says, Mekaneach yadav b'mapa u'maniha al shulchan, and Beit Hillel says, al hakeset, well, there would have been a clearer way to phrase the Mishnah. Because the words, Mekaneach yadav b'mapa, are really not limited to the opinion of Beit Shammai. They're common to the both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
The better way to phrase this would have been Mekaneach yadav mapa : Beit Shammai umrim maniha al shulchan, Beit Hillel umrim al hakeset. Logically, but structurally, the way it's structured here is the normal structure. that it doesn't give a scenario before it says Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. It's a scenario within the machloket, as it were.
It's saving ink, essentially. It's saving...
It's not saving ink. I could have said the exact same thing, the same words in a different order. Right? I could have said, Makaneach Yadava Mapa, Beit Shammai Umrim Manicha Ala Shulchan, Beit Hillel Umrim Ala Kesef.
Well, you're saving that word Beit Shammai Umrim because you already have it.
No. No, listen to what I'm saying.
Oh.
I could have said the Mishnah like this.
Good.
Mikaneach Yadava Mapa.
Oh, okay.
Then,
Beit
Shammai Umrim Manicha Ala Shulchan, Beit Hillel Umrim Ala Kesef.
Okay.
But this is the common structure. Okay. And of course, talking about saving ink, if we didn't want to save ink, when it says Beit Hillel Umrim Ala Kesef, would have written a full sentence, which is, at least add the word Manicha. Manicha Ala Kesef. But we understand what's going on. Okay. So just to summarize, there's a machloket of where you put the damp towel after you wipe your hands. And apparently this is in the course of eating a meal. You're at a meal and you have a towel. In our days we use napkins, but at formal dinners we have towels. Where do you put the towel after you wipe your hands? You put it on the table or put it on the keset? Remember, we're asking ourselves also the question, is this reshut or is this chovah?
Okay. Is it required or is it permitted?
Yes. So now let's go to the questions that I asked to try and figure out why such a machloket of where to put your napkin when you go to the Akiva dinner. So everyone has the question sheet, right? And the question sheet, the first question we did already, which words attributed to Beit Shammai are actually the heading for Beit Hillel as well? What's the answer to that question?
Wipe your hands.
Wipe your hands, right. Right. Number two. Question number two. Goes like this. Question number two says, if this Mishnah is a continuation of the previous one, which we don't really remember so well because that was last week and the week before, what is the situation referred to in which one Mikaneach Yadav B'mapa? Why are you wiping your hands with a mapa? So if we could go back to the previous Mishnah, we'll remember the previous Mishnah was talking about, let's just read it, the previous Mishnah, right? Beit Shammai Amrim Notnim Yadayim. The context was Nitilat Yadayim. So without going through the whole Mishnah, we'll just remember that the previous Mishnah was talking about Nitilat Yadayim. So this Mishnah is also continuing where it left off. When you do Nitilat Yadayim, where do you throw the towel? So we throw our towels in the garbage because we have paper towels. But if you have a cloth towel, where do you put it? Do you put it on the table or on the chair? The keset, right? The couch. Where do you put the damp towel? Okay, question three. Question three, we also did already. What is the meaning of the final hey in the word manicha? So we said...
Direct object.
How would you translate it into English, that hey?
It.
By the way, just to remind everyone of things we learned last year, that aspirated hey, 3 points to the person remembers what it's called in Hebrew. I knew you'd get it, okay. That's a mapik hey. And it's aspirated.
It sounds like a song.
Sounds like a...
song.
A song.
Copy K.
Okay, so we got to question four. Question four is a klutz kasha. For what very practical reason do you think that one doesn't just leave them up in the kitchen or by the sink? It's very...
Because you've washed at the table, at your dinner place.
That could be. I didn't even think of that. I was just thinking of something else.
It would end up getting used to...
somebody else. If you have a guest over, it would make sense to be direct so the person after you could do it.
You know what? You all could be right. But just remember, they didn't eat with forks and spoons.
Right.
They ate with their hands. So you probably want to have the mapa with you for the meal.
Right.
Because your hands get pretty dirty.
Oh, it's your napkin.
It's going to be right.
Continuing napkin for continuing use.
And that's not that like they had 10 different napkins. They didn't have napkins probably.
Right.
Well, you want to guard it. You want to guard it because you don't want it to get near food, right? Because it's wet. Is that right?
Exactly. In other words, we have here a tension between two factors. On the one hand, this mapa is wet, and therefore it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. The other hand is all we have to clean our hands while reading. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep bring it to the table, but in a fashion that's not going to cause us, not going to trip us up.
What if you spill wine on it?
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
If it's really wet.
Well, right. But you
get club soda.
But you can't.
Well, why are you saying that? If I spill wine on it, it's very wet.
Right.
It's just as dangerous as it was earlier when it was damp from my intellect dying.
You're saying if you had to get another one?
Well, you couldn't. But I'm just saying.
Why is it wet?
Why do you say you couldn't get another one?
Because they didn't have a lot. You said.
Yeah,
okay, you're just saying it's a practical matter.
Yeah, sure. I guess so. Again, I'm not a big expert.
Wet is wet. I mean,
wet is wet.
Okay.
I just said wet.
And then did Eric brings up a good question. What's the definition of wet?
Right. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah, so there is a big discussion of what the definition of wet is. More or less you can say wet is something that can make something else wet. That's the definition of wet. If it's wet enough to make something else wet, then it's wet. Uh-huh. In other words, if you put one towel next to the wet towel, if the dry towel became wet in any noticeable fashion, then the wet towel is called wet. If the wet towel wasn't wet enough to make a second towel wet, then it's not wet. That's called tofeach al menat lapiach. Wet in order to make wet is the definition of wet. Okay. Now, question 5 is also an easy question. Which keset do you think that Beit Hillel is talking about? So that we already said, it's the keset that you're sitting on. Okay. And it's the only place you have to put a towel if you can't put it on the shulchan. Unless you'd put it on the floor, I guess.
In other words, they didn't have chairs. They ate on the pillow. They sat on the pillow.
So I guess this keset is what you're lying on or sitting on. Even if it could be that they lie down only for formal meals. They might not be lying down, but they're on some type of kesetot that are their chairs on the floor. That's perhaps, you know, pillows that they're sitting on. Okay.
Or it could be a pillow on a bench. A lot of places, they each have some places were built with a ledge.
That's true.
And then, and then there are cushions.
Right.
Or you could have a bench with cushion.
Yeah.
Or a cushion on the floor.
A cushion on the floor. Okay, so now we get to the complicated stuff. Question 6. According to what we learned from the previous Mishnah, why does this situation of mekaneach yada b'mapa make something about the mapa particularly susceptible to becoming tame? So what is it about the mapa, what part of the mapa, what element of the mapa becomes tame, potentially?
The liquid,
right. So
we're saying that it is a kli.
What's a kli?
The napkin.
The napkin. Well, that doesn't matter, because we're worried not about the napkin, but we're worried about the liquid on the napkin.
Okay.
So we have this liquid on the napkin, and we have discussion, put it on the chair or put it on the table. And why are we particularly concerned about this? Because we said that there's a takana, that liquids can become a rishon from a sheni. Did you hear that? Right? That's the strange takana of water flowing backwards, going from a sheni to a rishon. So we're very, very concerned about having any liquids on the table. And even liquids that are in the mapa are dangerous because there might be a sheni around that can make those liquids into a shun. What do I mean a sheni around? We'll get to that in another few minutes. Where might there be a sheni lurking in the area? But let me remind you that a sheni latuma in general is not a dangerous thing. Because if we go back to the chart, right? Normally, doraita, a sheni l'tumah, that's number 4 in the chart, what could it do? It can only affect a kodesh or truma, and if I'm not a kohen, so I have no problems. But suddenly, with this new takana, that a liquid can become a rishon from a sheni, now the whole world becomes a dangerous place. Okay, so this is there...
It actually demonstrates, I think, a better understanding of bacteriology, you know, and you know, the real
ways that, that things are transferred, you know, from hands to things and, you know, the outside of things.
But you're assuming that this has any correlation to...
I know. I'm...
To a physical reality, that's a big, 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 big question.
Okay.
You could give a class on that, maybe.
I don't know if I could.
Okay, so number 7. From what object does Beit Shammai fear that something about the mapa, meaning the liquid, might contract tuma, that you'll have to figure out? What does Beit Shammai hold? Where do you put this napkin?
On the table.
On the table. So what do you think is Beit Shammai's fear? Where does he want to keep the napkin away from?
Away from the keset, I would think.
Probably away from the keset.
The cushion.
The cushion.
Yeah.
So now we've just figured out something. If Eric is right, and he is, when Beit Shammai says, put it al shulchan, that's not chovah. It's simply reshut. And what he means to say is, don't put it on the keset. Don't put it on the keset. For some reason, Beit Shammai is consumed by the fear that your keset is a sheni latuma, and it'll make the liquid in the towel into a rishon latuma. Once you have a rishon lurking around, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So Beit Shammai says, put your mapa any place but on the keset. And for some reason that we'll have to talk about, he yells that the shulchan is a safe place. For some reason, he is sure there's no sheni lurking on the shulchan. But there is a chance that the keset is a sheni. Again, for some reason we don't know about yet. Okay, next. Number 8. Why might it be a problem if that something about the mapa, which again is the liquid, becomes tamea during the meal? Let's say the liquid does become a rishon. So what? What now might become a sheni? You have to go back now to this chart over here.
All the food and drink.
All the food and drink. Is that...
I would say his hands. Because while he's eating, he's going to go over and he's going to wipe his hands on the mapa.
Here, so you both said something important, right? So let's think which is more likely. David said the Ochlim Mashkim. The Ochlim Mashkim. Oh, but we can respond to David. When does food usually have contact with a towel? Not usually. But what Reuven said, hands have contact with them with the wet towel. So, but can hands become a sheni l'tuma from this rishon? Because our chart says that only ochlim mashkim can become a sheni. But the Rabbanan, we just learned that hands
can become a
sheni. And that goes back to, where was that? Was that in C or in D? Yeah. Let me remind myself. No, that was in C.
The hands in A.
Right, sorry, that was an A. Yeah, right. There was in the last sentence of A, we said in the same firmament, the rabbis further declare the hands, even if already washed, that touch rishon l'tuma can become a sheni l'tuma. Right, just back in A. Thank you very much. So we washed our hands, and in doing so, our hands now are okay, but the mapa became wet. We come back, and says Beit Shammai, if you put your mapa on the keset, well, the keset might be a sheni l'tuma. The keset...
Oh, because, okay.
The keset might be... Well, wait a second, a sheni... It's only a lochlim mashkim. The keset is a kli.
But the Rabbanan it can.
Right, the Rabbanan it can. Right.
But D, it says, the liquids added to the above matter of liquids by decreeing that although a rishon usually only passes tuma to food and drink, here it will be passed onto kelim. So it can make any of the things you put it on. Isn't that right? The cushion or the table?
But so I'm saying, what is the status of the cushion? Let's go back to the cushion. Mm-hmm. The cushion would have to be rishon,
right, for the liquid,
even the liquid has become a rishon.
But how does liquid become a rishon? We said liquid can become a rishon, even from a sheni. But how does it do that? Because the keset. Okay, so anyway, certainly if the keset is a rishon, then the liquid will become a rishon. Liquid will become a rishon.
Oh, what about from anita? Because anita's
let's say anita sat in the keset, okay, but yeah. Then what does the keset become?
It becomes a rishon.
That's what I'm saying. Let's say the keset is a rishon. Let's say there's such a thing, the keset is a rishon. And then the liquid on the mapa touches it. The liquid becomes a rishon. Not a sheni. That's the whole takana. Liquid becomes a rishon. My hands touch it, and my hands now can become a sheni. And then I'm eating my meal with hands that are sheni, and I have to go back and wash. That seems to be Beit Shammai's fear.
And if anyone else washes and uses that towel, then it's
don't go
it's
there.
It's for no.
In other words, beyond. You're saying when I wash my hands...
No, I'm saying the towel...
What do I dry them with?
Yeah, what do you dry them with? Because now your towel is tamei.
I hear.
That's another glass.
Do you have to dry it, or could you shake it off enough until it gets dry?
Air dry?
Let me not talk about things I don't know.
Okay. I will have to...
Okay, so anyway, we are now, we looked at question 8, we said Beit Shammai is afraid of Tuma being passed on to the hands that got it from the liquid, that got it from the chair, from the keset. 9, from what object does Beit Hillel fear that something about the mapa, meaning the liquid in it, might contract Tuma? Well, it's easy, just by process of elimination. If Beit Hillel says to put it on the keset, which means don't put it where?
On the shulchan.
On the shulchan. That means Beit Hillel, for some reason, is afraid that the shulchan is tameh. That the shulchan is tameh.
See, but I think that perhaps Beit Hillel is concerned about the status of the table.
Yeah, that's what we said.
Just said. No, but you know, wait a second, 9. Fear, there's something about... Oh, yes, right, okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
Okay, let me just think a second. Okay.
I was thinking you were saying that the towel would get it from the table.
I wrote it in the wrong place. Yeah.
Sorry. What? No, I thought it was hands, too.
Well, we just read the wrong question. That was Shama.
I thought we had said... I thought we had said that the towel was going to be infected by the table, but no, we were saying that's what I
there's heard. Different fears, yeah. Is what the rabbi just yeah. was saying. I think yeah. one, you've got the wet towel that you're afraid will become
rishon,
a rishon, and so therefore put it in a place where it won't become rishon. And base, and they don't have a difference apparently about what the law is, but just where it's greater risk.
Yeah, and we'll see why that's.
And so Shammai says, put it on the table because they're afraid of you putting it on the cushion. And Hillel says, put it on the cushion because he's afraid of putting it on the table. For whatever reasons we don't clearly understand yet.
Right. Yes, that's all true. Let me just go back and say that a minute ago we're asking ourselves if we put the wet towel on the chair. And we're afraid of it becoming tamei, we said. We said, what is the chair's status? So we said, perhaps Anida sat on the chair. And it would be there for a rishon. Mm-hmm. And then the liquid in the towel might become a rishon. But I just want to go back a second and remind everyone of what I wrote in D. That even though Doraita, a kli, can never be a sheni, but the Rabbanan, we said, that the outside of a kli could be a sheni. So if the outside of a kli could be a sheni, so that would mean that the table or the keset could be a sheni. Darabanan could be a sheni. Darabanan. And then the liquid, when it touches either the table or the chair,
becomes a rishon.
Becomes a rishon.
Making water.
And then my hands that touch it become a shini and have to go wash again. So that's the fear. And again, like David said, for some reason, which we'll see now in the next 5 minutes, there's a machloket, where is there more of a fear of the liquid becoming in contact with the shini? On the table or in the chair? Okay. Good. Good. We're going, doing good. Then the next question. The next question is 10, right?
Reminds me of all the rigmaroles.
Why might it be a problem, according to Beit Hillel, if something about the mapa becomes to me during the meals that we talked about? That we talked about.
You'll get your hands.
Right. Right. Now, okay. 11. What disagreement between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel do we learn about for the last Mishnah, but the usage of kelim that are tmeim from the outside? Ah, right. That's the key. That's the key. So remember, only Eric was here.
I think
Reuben was here. You remember Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai was really the foundation of the previous Mishnah about using a keli, a kli, whose outside is tamei.
It was about when you do netilat yadayim.
Yeah, so what was the machloket? Who said what? Are you allowed or are you not allowed to eat a meal with a kli whose outside is a sheni latuma?
Beit Shammai says you can't.
Exactly. Beit Shammai says there's a takana, you can't use kelim that are sheni latuma, the Rabbanan, on their outside. Whereas Beit Hillel didn't have such a takana. Beit Hillel didn't have such a takana. Okay, so now let's think.
We should say that one more time. Beit Shammai says you cannot use vessels that
are a sheni latuma on their outside.
Are a second level
tuma on their outside for a meal. You're not allowed to use them.
So you have to wash first.
Which is why you have to wash before doing kiddush.
Right.
Wait, is that right?
She says wash and then pour the wine.
Yeah, you wash and then mosgim it.
Yeah, before kiddush.
Beit Shammai said wash and then afterward pour the wine. Beit Hillel says pour the wine and afterward wash.
Right. So Beit Shammai said... Oh, right. Because... Oh, right. Yeah, because Beit Shammai said that if you don't wash your hands first, you might make the outside of that kli into a shini, and therefore you can't make kiddush with it, therefore wash your hands first. Hmm. Beit Hillel wasn't afraid of the kli becoming tamei on the outside. If it did, so what? So what? He said. Right. So anyway...
He didn't hold with that
so
rule.
He didn't hold with that.
Okay.
So now we get to everything. Here's our table. And the table is a kli. And the top of the table is the outside of the kli. Let's say. That's the way they're holding. Top of the table is the outside of the kli. So if Beit Shammai is a takana that you can't use a kiddush cup whose outside is a sheni latuma, that's why you have to wash your hands before you make kiddush, because if you didn't, you might make the kli on the outside into a sheni. How would you do it? Because if your hands were stam yadayim, that's a sheni. If a little bit of wine spills out of the cup onto the outside of it, then your hands touch that, it becomes the rishon. And the rishon makes the outside of the kli into a sheni. Ah! And then Beit Hillel says you can't make kiddush. Beit Hillel says, so what if the outside of the kli becomes a sheni latuma? It doesn't bother me. That's why Beit Hillel allowed you to make kiddush before washing your hands. Fine. So now we transfer that to our table. We have our table. And we have this mapa that's wet lurking around. And says Beit Shammai, don't put it on the table. Mm-hmm. You put it on the table...
It's going to get the outside of the cup.
The table's... No, the table's like the outside of the cup.
No, but Beit Shammai says you put it on the table.
Right. I'm sorry.
Put it on the cup.
Okay, oh,
right.
So yeah, Beit Shammai says that you're not allowed to eat on a table that's a sheni latuma. If you're not allowed to eat, then there's no fear that the table is going to give you any tuma. The table, by definition, has to be tor. Therefore, you can put your wet mapa on the table. Because there's nothing on the table that's going to cause tuma.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Beit Hillel doesn't order you to put it on the cushion. He's just saying, it's okay to put it on the cushion. It's not a problem. Beit Hillel.
But Beit Hillel is saying, don't put it on the table.
No, he just says, put it on the cushion. It's permitted to...
In other words,
permitted to put it on the cushion.
Because what he really wants to say is don't put it on the table. Beit Hillel says don't put it on the table, because since Beit Hillel doesn't have any takana that prevents you from eating on a table that is a sheni letuma, therefore Beit Hillel is assuming that your table might be a sheni. If your table might be a sheni, then don't put the wet mapa on it, because the wet mapa, its water will become a rishon. When its water becomes a rishon, your hands, when you touch it, will become a sheni, and you can't eat. You have to go back and wash. So what it turns out is that Beit Hillel is more lenient in his general principles, and therefore that requires you to be more strict in your specific behavior. Let me say that again. Beit Hillel allows you to have a table that is a sheni l'tumah. Beit Shammai says you can't. Beit Shammai is putting up a fence. You can't have a table that's a sheni, because you might put your mapa on it. Says Beit Hillel, no, we're more lenient in our general principles. We're not going to cause, we're not going to tell you that you have to dunk your table in a mikveh if it becomes a sheni letumah. You can live with it. But that means you have to be a little bit more careful in your daily life. And don't put your wet napkin on the table. Put it on the chair. Again, you don't have to put it on the chair. Just don't put it on the table.
Very subtle.
Beit Shammai, when they say put on the table, they don't mean you have to put it on the table. They just mean don't put it on the chair. Because the chair might be a sheni. Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai is a takana. Don't eat on a table that's a sheni, but there's no such takana on a chair.
And Beit Hillel is not concerned about the chair being a sheni? That's a question, I think, that we have to...
Very good. Very good. Why doesn't Beit Hillel say, hold it in your teeth? Because he's afraid of the table, because there's no takana against the table being a sheni, so he's afraid of the table. But why isn't he afraid of the chair being a sheni, the tuma?
Does he have a takana about using a chair? You could say, I mean, that would be...
Okay, so let's go on. We have to get to those questions.
Okay.
We just did question 12. What extension of the above-mentioned disagreement might help to explain the disagreement in our Mishnah? In other words, the disagreement concerning the use of a Kiddush cup was outside is temeh, is extended to a table. And that's everything we just explained. So fine, now everything is okay except Eric's question. Why is Beit Hillel not afraid of a chair that's temeh? Can you imagine living like this? How do you keep track of everything? There's no labels on the chair that says this is a sheni, this is a rishon, this is a shlishi.
Because he never touches the chair?
Sit again, please.
Because he never touches the chair?
Your hands never touch
I'm saying maybe he doesn't because he never touches the chair.
That's what Rabbi means when he says, it's really hard to live this way.
Yeah.
How can you do that?
Right.
You know, I mean,
I don't know.
You move it and you have to, you know.
I know.
What do you do when your wife wants to sit down? You move the chair for her.
Okay.
Okay, we don't know.
So now we learn the Gemara and see if it adds anything to what we've learned.
So chivalry didn't come from concern for women, but for...
post-Beit Mikdash, post-Korban.
So post-Opri, good question. Remember, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were talking before the destruction of the temple. After the destruction of the temple, the houses of Hillel and Shammai basically disintegrated. Beit Shammai basically disappeared. Beit Shammai basically disappeared after the Mikdash was destroyed. Yeah. Actually, they say that all that was left of Beit Shammai was Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol.
Uh-huh.
He was the last of Beit Shammai. And he lived till Yavne. He saw the destruction and made it to Yavne. Yes. Okay, so let's look at the Gemara. I gave out just one page of Gemara, that's all we're doing today, and that's the end. And it's not a difficult Gemara. I have questions on the Gemara, but I don't think we'll have to have recourse to them. So the Gemara goes like this. Everyone have the place?
Yeah.
Beit Shamayim Rim Mekaneach V'chulei. That's a quote from the Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan. Beit Shamayim Rim. So what does it mean, Tana Rabbanan? It's a Braita, right?
Yeah.
We're quoting a Braita that's parallel to the Mishnah. And the parallelism of this Braita to the Mishnah is a classic parallelism. The Braita was more extensive, with reasons. And we'll see the Mishnah is an extraction from the Braita, only with the final line, the final machloket. Here we go, Tana Rabbanan. Beit Shammai Omrim, Mikaneach Yadav B'mapa, Umanihah Al Hashulchan. That was found in the Mishnah, right? That's word for word the Mishnah. And again, the proper understanding is the Mishnah extracted it from this earlier, more extensive source. Because the source that we're reading now goes on with a reason. Not just the law, but the reason. Why do you put it on the shulchan, the wet mapa? She'im ata omer ala keshet. Because if you say on the chair, if you say put on the chair, gzeira shema yitamu mashkim sheba mapa machmat hakeset. If you would say put on the chair, no. The word no is missing. Can't do that. Why? Because gzeira, it's a gzeira. Shema, what does shema mean?
Lest.
Lest yitam'u hamashkim shemapa, lest will become tamei, the mashkim that are in the mapa, right? The wetness in the mapa, machmat hakeset, because of the keset. In other words, what's going on? Like we said earlier, we're afraid, if we're Beit Shammai, we're afraid that the keset is a rishon or a sheni, and the water in the mapa will then become a rishon. And then you touch it, your hands become a shini. You have to go wash them again. V'yachzaru v'yitamu et yadayim. The water in the mapa will yachzaru, will return v'yitamu et yadayim, and will make tamei the yadayim, just like we said. So that's Beit Shammai. Don't put the mapa on the keset. That's the whole thing. Don't put it on the chair, because the chair might be a rishon or a sheni, which is very, very likely. It's very possible. So that now seems to be the end of the braita, because the next word is Aramaic, and Aramaic is not part of a braita. But I'll already reveal now what's happening. The Gemara has a long braita. It divides it up into pieces. And between those pieces, it asks questions in Aramaic against the braita. So now we're in the middle of the Braita, but we're stopping the Braita, and the Gemara is asking a question. It says, Untamei keset lamapa. Untamei, and let make tamei the keset to the mapa. What that question means is, why are you talking about the water in the mapa? Be worried about the mapa itself. Be worried that the mapa itself, forget about water in the mapa, that the mapa itself will become tamei from the keset. But that's an easy answer. What's the answer to that? Why are we not afraid of a dry mapa?
Oh, because he has a kli v'tamei kli.
Because, very good. Because if the keset is a sheni, it certainly couldn't make the mapa into anything. And even if the keset is a rishon, it couldn't make the mapa into anything, because a sheni can only make ochlim v'mashkim into a sheni. So that's why we're talking only about the water, and it's the water. It's a special decree that a water can become, we said, a rishon from a sheni. Liquids. So that's what the Gemara says. The answer is ein kli, mitamei kli, like Reuven just said. The kli can't make a kli tamei. It can only be ochlim u'mashkim. Doraita. But there's the Rabbanan thing we said about the Rishon Hasheni making liquid into Rishon. Okay. Then the Gemara asks another kusha. Untamei keset legavra gufei. Let make tamei the cushion to the man himself. Ah, if you're afraid that my chair is tamei, why are you letting me sit on it? Why are you afraid just about the water in the mapa? What about you? You're sitting on the chair.
Ein kli mitamei adam.
Ein kli mitamei adam. A kli doesn't mean mitamei adam. We said again, the kli can only be, we can go back to our chart, right? The Kli, even if it's a Rishon, right, can only make Ochlim HaMashkim into a Sheni. But a Kli can't be Mitamei.
So don't come to the table in your bathing suit.
Don't come to the table in your wet bathing suit.
In your wet clothes.
Why, my mother told me that.
Now all the wisdom of our parents is
making
being
sense.
Justified, right? Yeah. Okay. So then, that's the end of the Gemara's questions against the Braita. And we go back to quoting the Braita. Okay, now, again, we're closing parentheses, going back to a quote of the Braita. Emphasize that the Braita was one unit. The Gemara divided it up, but it was one piece of literature. Uvei Telel Umrim al Hakeset. Right, Beit Hillel says, put it on the keset.
Sure. On the cushion.
On the cushion, right. And now the Braita goes on to explain why. And this part of the Braita was cut out of the Mishnah. Shema talmer l'shulchan, that if you say on the shulchan, if you say put it on the shulchan, gzeira shema yitam'u mashkim shebamapa machmat shulchan. Right, read it again. Put it on the keset, that if you say on the table, then there's a gzeirah. Now don't put it on the table, because there's a gzeirah. Lest will make tamei the mashkim in the mapa because of the shulchan. V'yachzuru v'yitamut the ochlim. And they will come back and make tamei the ochlim. Let's think of what we just read. So it says, don't put the wet mapa on the shulchan, because if you would do that, then the wetness of the mapa would become tamei because of the shulchan, and that wetness would come back and make tamei the ochlim.
I wonder why it says ochlim instead
of yadayim. Because I think the answer is because the fact they'll make yadayim tameim is true, but there's something even worse. Because on the table there's also food, right? And the table is also food. If you have, so if the table is a sheni, it can't directly make any food into anything. That's no problem. But if you have mashkim there, mashkim will become a rishon, and a rishon can make ochlim and mashkim into a sheni. So yes, David's right. The mapa can also, the water in the mapa can make your hands into a sheni, but there's something even worse, because there's food on the table. So that's why Beit Hillel say, keep that wet napkin off the table. Okay. And then the Gemara asks questions on the Braita, just like it asked earlier against the Braita. It says, U tamei shulchan lochlim shebatocho, let make tamei the shulchan the ochlim that are on it. Right? If you say the table might be tamei and there's food on it, the food might become tamei. Why didn't you say that? Says the Gemara against the Braita. And the answer is, of course, simple. Hacha b'shulchan sheni askinan. Here, in a shulchan sheni, we're talking. No one is afraid that the shulchan is a rishon, and a rishon can make ochlim and mashkim into a sheni. No one would eat on a shulchan that's a rishon. Are you crazy? But a shulchan that's a sheni, that's what we're talking about. That's the common case. Which means right of a shulchan that's a sheni. Now it's true that the Raita, a shulchan can't be a sheni, because only ochlim and mashkim could be a sheni. But said the Rabbanan that a kli's outside can become a sheni. That's our fear here. So the fear is that the shulchan is a sheni, and that can't make the ochel into anything, but it could make liquids into a rishon. So again, keep those liquids away.
What's up, guys?
Keep those liquids away from the shulchan that might be a sheni. So I'm just going to read on the Gemara. We said, Hacha b'shulchan sheni askin. And here, in the shulchan that's a sheni, we're talking. Vein sheni oseh shlishi b'chulin. Ela yedei mashkin. And a sheni doesn't make into a shlishi in chulin, as opposed to truma. Ela yedei mashkin, except through mashkin, because we said that the sheni can make mashkin into a rishon, and the rishon can then make the food into a sheni. So everything seems to make sense. And that's the end of the Gemara's explanation of the Braita. And we understand everything except for the fundamental question that Eric asked. Say it again.
Why isn't Beit Hillel concerned about the Keset?
Right.
About the Keset receiving Tumah, being a Sheni L'Tumah.
Right.
Yeah, why isn't he concerned?
Right. Right. Okay. So now the Gemara will answer that, hopefully.
Okay.
B'mai kamipalge. In what are they arguing? And that word mipalge, you notice in it the root, Pei Lamed Gimel. And what modern Hebrew word do you recognize in Pei Lamed Gimel?
Peleg,
which means?
I can't remember.
Say it again?
I can't remember. I know the word, but...
A peleg, you're correct.
Yeah.
Also, what other word? Elections?
Oh, haflaga.
Haflaga, miflaga.
Miflaga.
Right?
Yeah.
So a peleg is a part. A miflaga is a...
Party.
A party. Right? And the word means a division. The word means a party, division, a part. But my kimapalge, in what are they divided? In other words, what's the makhlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? What's the big deal? What's the fundamental? So it says, Beit Shammai sabrei. Beit Shammai holds asur lishtemesh b'shulchan sheni. It's forbidden to use a shulchan that's a sheni. We said that already.
Yeah.
Gzeira mishum ochlei tshuma. It's a gzeira because of ochlei tshuma. It's a gzeira because of those people who eat tshuma. They certainly shouldn't eat on a shulchan that's a sheni, because a shulchan that's a sheni can make a shlishi in kodesh and tshuma. Mm-hmm. So certainly kohenim don't eat on a shulchan that's a sheni. Normal people could. But Beit Shammai says normal people shouldn't do it, because we should act like Kohenim, so the Kohenim never do it, so the Kohenim wouldn't do it, so if our Shulchan is never a Sheni, there's no fear with putting the wet Mapa on the Shulchan. That's fine, that we understand. So Beit Shammai Savri, Asul Ishtamesh B'Shulchan Sheni, Gzeira Mishum Ochlei Mashkin, Ochlei Tshuma. Now, Beit Hillel Savri, Mutal Ishtamesh B'Shulchan Sheni. Beit Hillel says it's mutalish to shulchan sheni if you're not a kohen, and therefore we have this fear that the shulchan is a sheni, and therefore you can't put the wet mapa on because it'll become a rishon. It'll make the ochel into a sheni.
Mutar, it's permitted to
eat, to use, to permitted use to use the shulchan sheni, a shulchan that's a sheni. Ochlei truma is rizin hem. People who are ochlei truma are especially careful. There's rizim, like, you know, zrizim makdimim lemitzvot. They're quick, they're careful. So, in other words, people who eat truma, they know to not use a shulchan sheni, and we don't have to have the same stringencies that they have, because they're careful. So we don't have to be careful just for them. You know, Beit Shammai trusts human nature a little less than Beit Hillel, seems to be. Beit Shammai makes gzeirot. Beit Hillel says people can figure out for themselves if you're ochlei Chuma, you won't use a shulchan that's a sheni, but if you're not ochlei chuma, it's okay. But we didn't find an answer to our question.
Right. It's all about the table, not about the kushya.
So we're still asking ourselves, why isn't there a fear that the keset would be a sheni? Does the Gemara talk about that further on? So the Gemara does have an answer. I just haven't seen this for many years. In the end, Beit Hillel says, you're right. It might be that the keset is a sheni. And therefore, you're right.
it could happen that the mashkim in the mapa would become a rishon. And then you're right, that might be mitameh your yadayim. And then you have to go wash again. But it says Beit Hillel, you have to go wash again. Okay, big deal. That's not as bad as a situation in which you might put the mapa on the table, and then the table would make the water in the mapan to rishon, and the water in the mapan make the ochlim and mashkim into a shini. If the ochlim and mashkim become tamei, that's bad. If the hands become tamei, so go wash them again.
Right, okay. That makes sense.
So it's, in
once
a certain
the
sense,
food is ruined in the sense, then it's...
Then you can't eat it.
Then the Kohen can't eat it.
Then the Kohen wouldn't be able to eat it.
Yeah.
So Beit Hillel says, you're right, we're taking a risk. We're living dangerously. It's not so bad. You know, I guess in the end, Beit Hillel says...
The less of two dangers, your pain,
yeah,
is what it is.
Whereas Beit Shammai
has the gezeirah.
Has this gezeirah that you can't have a shulchan that's a shini, that solves all the problems. But Beit Hillel is not willing to make life so difficult for us that we have to stay away from a shulchan that's a shini. So it's dangerous, you're right. It might be that the keset is a shini, so you have to wash your hands again. Fine. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.